This is the Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Anfield.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Analysing Anfield, your tactics and analytics podcast, courtesy of Blood Red Channel. I'm Josh Williams, back in the hosting seat this week, and I'm rejoined by David Hughes. Dave, you got big boots to fill, mate. Guy Clark was outstanding.
I'd expect nothing else, to be honest with you, mate. I'm glad to hear this. But yeah, I'm back.
How was your break?
Unfortunately, yeah, it was good. Yeah, it was a good break. I was over in New York. Actually, met a few Reds over there. I watched the Liverpool West Ham game at a place called 11th Street Bar, something like that. So yeah, if anyone goes there, I was there Saturday. Kindly had one or two drinks bought for me.
Any listeners?
Yeah, Lubo, actually, if anyone follows on Twitter. Okay. He kindly bought me a pint, of which I'm thankful for. But yeah, I think there was a couple there. So, you know, if they want to invite us over to do a live show, by all means, do that. Just you cover the cost if you don't mind. But it was good, mate. It was a good trip, and good to be back today.
Yeah, it's good to have you back. You haven't missed that much, really. But Liverpool have progressed in the Champions League. We're going to speak about that. Liverpool have got Brighton on the horizon, and we've also got Arsenal next week. So I think first things first, obviously we can't look past Liverpool's Champions League progression. That was last night. We are recording on the Wednesday morning. Early afternoon. Bit of debate on Liverpool Twitter, certainly, as to whether... I mean, Liverpool obviously lost the game. There's been contrasting views on whether it was a tie, whether Liverpool scraped through, whether, despite losing one game, Liverpool found it relatively easy. I mean, have you got any thoughts on that, anywhere you sit?
I must admit, I don't agree with Liverpool scraped through. I can maybe understand where some of that comes from, because particularly yesterday I didn't think it was an outstanding Liverpool performance by their own standards. Obviously, it looks a tight aggregate scoreline on paper as well, but I think if you look at both fixtures, over the two games, I thought Liverpool have done more than enough to qualify, I'll be honest. I know obviously they had to go down to 10 men in the second leg, which maybe changes the course of the game slightly. As I said, I do believe that Inter were competitive, maybe even more so than the underlying numbers say, because obviously we know football's about creating chances and scoring goals. And I think maybe if Inter were lacking in part, it was the decision-making in the final third, especially in that first game in stages. I thought they look quite dangerous in the second half of the first leg without necessarily scoring or getting shots off. But on the whole, Josh, for me, I do believe, you know, Liverpool did do enough over the course of the two legs to qualify. So that's where I'd stand on.
I must say, I was very, very impressed with Inter Milan over the two legs. I think the by far the best Italian team Klopp has faced at Liverpool. And if you look at the expected goals over the two legs, Liverpool posted a combined total over both legs of about 2.4, and Inter Milan posted a combined total of about 0.8. So when you look at that, in terms of the shots both teams have generated, Liverpool probably deserved to pick this, and it probably was around a 2-1, like a good score, really, when you look at it. I think over both legs, I was most impressed with Inter Milan's defensive approach. I think defensively, they were very, very aggressive and very difficult as a play through. And I watched the game with me dad, and he was pointing out, over the game, Liverpool's passing was really bad. And Liverpool's, you know, the first touch of certain players wasn't particularly great and things like that. And I thought to myself, well, that was the same in the first leg. So I thought to myself, That can't be much of a coincidence, really, when you think about it. Over both legs, Liverpool's passing is off or seems off. First touch of certain players seems off. And I think to an extent, you've got to put it down to the defensive approach of Inter Milan. If you've got a player up your backside every single time you receive the ball, standing on your toes and standing on your heels and things like that, and blocking passing lanes and things, it does make you look bad when you're on the ball. And I do think, although Liverpool weren't great over both legs, I think a lot of that stemmed from Inter Milan, and particularly their approach against the ball. But as you said, in possession, I think they could have offered a bit more, particularly when he got to the final third. Just the odd bad decision, the odd move broke down. I think over the course of the two legs, probably the best attacker was, aside from Perisic, was probably Alexis Sanchez, and he goes and gets himself sent off. But it was an interesting tie, and one that Liverpool, I think, deservedly progressed past. And I don't think they scraped through by any means, but I also don't think it was easy at all. I don't think the first game was a 2-0. The second game was a 1-0 defeat.
No, this is what I think. What I found, and bear in mind, I'm not as deeply immersed into the Liverpool Twitter scene as you will be, and probably most people who are on the platform will be, who are listening now. But I saw a lot of justifications for Liverpool's perceived kind of dominance. Again, going back to that first leg, but both ties centered around, you know, XG, and we've just touched on the numbers there. But as I said, I think if you watch the games, there was a plenty that Inter done really well against Liverpool. You've touched on what they were doing without the ball, and I think they played through Liverpool a lot better than I've seen many other opponents do, certainly this season. So again, I thought that was impressive. It was just maybe they didn't actually get enough off in terms of shots generated, or, you know, decision making in the attacking third, which maybe impacted those numbers a little bit. But they were still really competitive, and, you know, if a few small things maybe would have gone their way, or they would have been a little bit better in part in the attacking third, then I was about to say it could have been tighter, but, you know, I suppose it couldn't have been really been any more any tighter in terms of scoreline, could it? You know, it's easy to forget that was a 2-1 aggregate victory. No away goals in play. So if Inter would have gone another one, it would have obviously gone to extra time. So maybe the scoreline is reflective of the two ties on the whole.
Yeah, I think in all fairness, I would probably say the first leg was probably a draw. And I'd say the second leg, I think Liverpool probably deserved to win maybe 1-0 or 2-0. But because of the curious, strange nature of football, Liverpool win the first leg 2-0 and lose the second leg 1-0.
Yeah.
It makes you think, doesn't it? Why are we even analysing this stuff?
Yeah. I often think that, you know, it's you try and analyse it, but it's impossible.
It doesn't make sense, bottom line.
Yeah. You can't predict the game, can you? You know, it can just change. So a goal can change it. You know, sending off, ironically, talking about last night. It just, anything can change it, which is why it's obviously so hard to predict, but also such a popular game.
Exactly. It makes it entertaining. You know, even the referee can influence things. And I think last night the referee was had a bit of a, just decided to play centre stage a bit, didn't he? And that, you know, that's football. Sometimes you can dominate. And
especially European referees, mate. Especially European referees. I think you get a little bit more of the stage, don't you? And you feel like you've got to justify being there because you're meant to be the cream of the crop, I guess, from each nation. And sometimes you see why these referees are considered the best, and other times you see the worst side of them.
Yeah, that's it. I think overall, though, looking at the tie, I think we should probably state that you know, what does it say about Liverpool that over both legs, you could argue they weren't at the best, yet they've pretty much, I mean, they've progressed, and the one goal that Inter Milan did score was an absolute screamer. I mean, go and ask him to do it again, see if he can. So I think it is testament to Liverpool's level at the minute and Liverpool's practicality on the pitch that we can play that way and still progress. And I think it kind of captures how difficult it might be to knock Liverpool out of this tournament, considering when Liverpool play bad, they still look like deserving winners. And they still restrict the opponent to, you know, having to score a screamer from far out, and Liverpool hit the post themselves a couple of times. So I think what I'm getting at anyway is just Liverpool's strength overall They are going to be really difficult to knock out, I think, because even on a bad day, you just pick up results.
Yeah, I agree. We looked, was it last week or, sorry, when I was last on, so maybe ahead of the Inter game. And we looked and it seemed as though there was basically three teams who were the favourites to go and win the Champions League, and it was just going to be variables that would kind of decide that. It was obviously City, Liverpool and Bayern Munich. Still stand by that. You know, it is going to be small margins, I think, that put Liverpool out of the tournament or see them go on and win it, which there should be a lot of confidence that it can be done this year for sure.
Yeah, just for a bit of context on that as well, Liverpool have played 44 times this season in all competitions and they've lost three. It's ridiculous, really. I think Manchester City have played 41 times and I think they've lost six. And Bayern have played considerably less, I think. But they are currently on five losses. So overall, over the course of two legs, if Liverpool aren't losing and the worst that they can do is draw, again, it just bodes well for progressing in this tournament. So when it comes to progression, Dave, obviously the other teams have to play still. So we're not going to know about that until they go through. But I suppose we can speculate at the minute. Liverpool are through. Bayern Munich are through. Paris Saint-Germain, probably. Manchester City, certainly.
Are you settled on PSG, are you?
After watching the first leg and seeing that they've got a lead, yeah, I am, because I think I thought Real Madrid was shocking, but maybe they'll turn it around tonight. They are at home. Maybe it was the plan all along. I'm not sure. I'm torn between United and Atletico. And I think, you know, Ajax and Benfica drew 2-2, but this is a home for Ajax, so I think Ajax will probably go through. Juventus also drew with Villarreal 1-1. But they're at home this time, so they'll probably go through. And Chelsea. So what are we saying? Are United and Atletico first?
I've got a feeling that Atletico do it, you know, because in that first game, I wasn't impressed by United at all. I think United just look such a mess, you know, even with, you know, Ragnick's gone in, it's just no better, really. And that isn't any kind of reflection on him. It's just a mess of a club, really. There's no alignment there, so it wouldn't surprise me if they kind of capitulate at home and lose that one. So I'm actually going to go Atletico to go through. And I tell you what, if they never, though, I think we'll probably touch on the teams you'd like to see Liverpool get. I think United would be a nice one for Liverpool if they get through.
Yeah, I agree. So, yeah, I don't know. If we're saying, right, that the teams in the next round are going to be Chelsea, Juventus, Atletico, Ajax, City, PSG, Liverpool and Bayern. Who is the best case scenario for Liverpool? Who are you saying?
For me, I'm torn between... Actually, no, I'm not. I'd say Juventus for me.
I was thinking the same, yeah.
Yeah, maybe 5 years ago would sound very strange, wouldn't it? You know, you'd have them in that top bracket with probably Bayern, Liverpool and City. But right now... You wouldn't. And Liverpool have just beat the champions of Italy. Juventus are quite far off that level at the moment. Well, actually, I don't know where they are in the league, but I know...
I think they're fourth.
Yeah, well, then they are, aren't they? So that's probably the best. And then, weirdly, this might be controversial, Josh. I get your thoughts on it, but probably then after that, I'd be looking at Ajax. Because I know they've been very good, but I just imagine they might maybe have a soft touch to them.
Yeah, I think I'm inclined to agree. Juventus would be my best draw, I think, out of the teams I've just listed, at least. And I do think the second best draw for Liverpool, although I do rate them very highly, I do think Liverpool would have just too much in terms of, like, I don't know, other qualities, like, you know, maturity, having been there and done it, physicality and things like that. Premier League's a lot more demanding than the Dutch Eredivisie. I remember watching the tour. I'm not sure if you was there with me. And I think it was the head of sports science at Ajax, and she showed us what the average tempo, the average speed of a Dutch Eredivisie game, and sped it up to show what the average tempo was like of a Champions League game. Was that there with you with that?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was at one of the StatsBomb conferences.
Yeah, well, I think I think Ajax are better equipped than most to cope with that change in intensity, but I think Liverpool's intensity can really different level. So, yeah, I would agree. I'd say Juventus is the best draw for Liverpool, and then Ajax. If the teams go through, we expect to go through. But in terms of the worst case draw, Dave, what are you saying? Who would you want to avoid most?
City, for me. And I know, I'd be interested to see what you think of that, because I know there's a school of thought that over 180 minutes in it, I don't know if it ties back because Liverpool beat them in Champions League before, that Liverpool would beat them again. But I think you still want to avoid City. I'd actually just, I don't know if I thought this one.
All gone.
I know, well, it's just, what I was about to say, I find myself arguing with myself, but I don't know whether I'd prefer to have Bayern over Chelsea, you know.
I was just thinking the exact same.
Really? Okay.
So, yeah. So I think my worst draw would be City, for obvious reasons. I know Liverpool are, I think, stylistically suited to facing City. Liverpool, Klopp against Pep kind of reminds me of paper versus scissors. Because everything Pep wants to do, Klopp is just tailor-made to cause problems for, if you know what I mean. But despite that, City at a ridiculous level. And I think that would be the most tricky draw for Liverpool. But I think second, I think I'd rather face Bayern than Chelsea. Meetings with Chelsea are never good. And Tuchel's good in knockout games. Chelsea are good in knockout games. We just faced them in a 120-minute final and came very, very close to losing. We faced them at Stamford Bridge a few months ago, albeit without Thiago and certain other players. It was 2-2. And we faced them at Anfield earlier in the season. They went down to 10 men at half-time and finished 0-0. So I really rate Chelsea as a knockout team. And I do think that, particularly defensively, I think very, very good. So I would want to avoid Chelsea personally, and I'd want to avoid City. And Bayern, although they've got a ridiculous squad, under Nagelsmann this season, they just do seem a bit... I mean, he do the first leg 1-1 at Salzburg, you know. So I do think at this point right now, Liverpool are slightly better than Bayern. Although you obviously have to consider the likes of Lewandowski up front and players like this, they are ridiculous squad-wise.
Yeah, I'd agree. I actually read somewhere, I'm going to see if I dig it out now, bear in mind, we're talking about lofty standards here, but Bayern have actually been, by their standards, a little bit softer. I know they blew away Salzburg at home last night for us anyway, but they beat Frankfurt only 1-0. Obviously drew with Salzburg, you mentioned that one. Previously, before they also drew with Leverkusen on the weekend, 1-1. They got beat by is it Bochum? How they pronounced?
Bochum.
We have some listeners. Yes, we have some listeners in Germany. You'll probably correct me, so apologies. But they got beat 4-2 on the road by them. Just about got past Leipzig a few weeks ago, 3-2. You know, they haven't been that dominant really by their standards. I think this is the worst start to the second half of a Bundesliga campaign in terms of points they've made. So I'm not saying by any stretch that suddenly easy to overcome. I just think maybe there's a bit more frailty in the armour than a year or two in the past. So could be certainly a better draw than either of the two English sides in Chelsea and City, in my opinion anyway.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the numbers now for Europe top five leagues this season. And if you look at, this is league only, goals conceded per match. So the most basic stat ever, really. City are the best, then Chelsea, Liverpool are fifth, and Bayern are joint 18th. Despite the fact that they're obviously the strongest in their division by some distance, but teams that concede less than them in terms of goals on a per-match basis include AC Milan, Liverpool battled AC Milan, Atletico Bilbao, Rennes, Villarreal, Marseille, Wolves, Nice, you know. So I think that they're a lot better when it comes to shots. I think the fifth in Europe for shots faced per match. So they don't give away too much in terms of shots and things. Liverpool are second for that number. But yeah, I think overall, although Bayern are obviously very, very strong and obviously one of the few teams who are capable of winning it, they're not maybe as intimidating as maybe the way it is as previous years. But because of the German champions and because it's Bayern Munich, people think they're always, you know, ridiculous levels. And to an extent, they are, but, you know. So it's going to be interesting anyway. See who we draw. But this weekend, mate, we have Brighton. I'm worried.
Are you?
Oh, I am, yeah.
Can you tell me why?
Yeah, go on. So I think this has got banana skin written all over it. Reason for that is Liverpool have been playing every 3 or 4 days for a good few weeks now. And in Liverpool's past 4 games, the result has been no more than 1 goal for either team separating, if you know what I mean. So yeah, let me get it up. So Liverpool have just lost 1-0 to Inter Milan. Beat West Ham 1-0, beat Norwich in the FA Cup 2-1, and then drew 0-0 over 120 minutes against Chelsea. So Liverpool's past 4 games in terms of the scoreline results have been really tight. Then you factor in that it's Brighton away from home, so it's kind of the furthest possible stadium away for Liverpool. Then you factor in it's the early kickoff, and then you factor in how well Brighton seem to do against Liverpool based on past meetings. I think they're the best. I said to Guy last week, I think it was, that in terms of Liverpool's offside trap, I think Brighton are probably the best I've seen at causing problems for it. They're very good at getting these late runners to make well-timed runs, and because of this, the system is very fluid and things like that. And obviously last time Liverpool faced Brighton at Anfield, it finished 2-2. So just seeing Liverpool have, not a wobble, but not be as fluid and as free-flowing as of late, coupled in with all those little mini factors that I've just listed. I hope we get out of it with a win, but I'm not sure. I think this one could be tricky.
Okay. I must admit, all good points. I suppose what I was thinking was, obviously, that they're actually really out of form by their standards. You know, they've I'm just going to bring up the results now, but I'm pretty sure it might be 1 win in 8 league games and 4 straight defeats. But typically, Brighton actually haven't been that bad in that spell.
Typical, you know, Brighton,
that, yeah, typical Brighton. I think they played fairly well against Newcastle, got beat 2-1. They conceded early on. It was a counter-attack or lost the ball transition, concede off it, then a set piece, and suddenly, you know, you're 2 goals down. And when that happens, it's hard to come back into it. But they still have lost four straight matches, you know, could lose a fifth here, which would be the first time in a couple of years. But just a separate side point I've noticed, Josh, is I was having a look at their underlying numbers, and it seems like they finally coinciding a little bit more with where they should be in the table. You know, for a long time, it felt like they were the team that was almost consistently underperforming based on the underlying numbers. Things like expected points would have them kind of as a, you know, a top six side, and they'd be closer to the bottom six. But this year, they kind of seem like a mid-table team, and that's where they are. So it looks like there's a bit more correlation there this season.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Yeah, I am looking at the form now, and over the last 9 matches in all competitions, they've won 1. So that makes me feel a bit better. And in the last 4 games, they have failed to score in 3 of them. And the expected goals as well suggest that that's probably fair. You know, against Newcastle, they did score, and they posted next year 1.3. But then against Villa, posted next year 0.6. Against Burnley, it was 0.5. And against Man United, it was 0.6 again. So, you know, hopefully they are out of form. And he seems to be particularly quiet lately in attack. Not particularly sure why. I think they've had a few injuries at the back, haven't they? They obviously lost Dan Burns to Newcastle. I think Lewis Dunk's missed one or two games through injuries and suspensions and stuff. Adam Webster, I think, has he got an issue as well?
Yeah, I think he's had some issues, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, those all make me feel better. I just feel like, you know, if we're talking banana skins and things like that, and Liverpool's previous meetings with Brighton, as I said, I do think they really seem to target Liverpool's offside trap, and some teams do that but don't really achieve it. Brighton seem to achieve it quite well, I think. They seem to be quite good at doing it.
Not to feed more into this banana skin narrative and get everyone nervous, but you know, for teams like Brighton, it is rare to see. And I'm talking about teams, you know, mid-table onwards. It's rare to see them lose five back-to-back in the Premier League, isn't it? You don't see it often. So having lost four coming into this one, it does kind of feel like, is this where they snap that streak? I can kind of see why you're a little bit worried. More so from a Liverpool perspective, because just how many games they seem to be playing at the moment. And do you think they look a little bit fatigued, the team?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure if fatigued is the right word. We just don't look... Like, a few weeks back, there was lots of talk around Liverpool and how they were flying and things like that. Beat Leeds 6-0, Norwich 3-1, Inter 2-0 without playing particularly well. And the narrative around that was that Liverpool were flying. I feel like lately, as I said, Liverpool are still getting results, but it's just a bit tighter in terms of the scoreline. I'm not sure. Maybe I'll have to delve into Liverpool's finishing a bit, because Liverpool do feel like they've missed a fair few chances of late. Mm-hmm. Posted next year of 2.5 against West Ham, only scored once. Failed to score against Chelsea despite the chances that we had. And against Inter Milan last night, Salah hits the post twice. Luis Diaz misses one from inside the 6-yard box. So maybe it's just one of those weird finishing things that we're going through lately. But I just feel like, as I said, Liverpool's past four games, whether we've won or lost, there's been one goal difference in all four of those games. And in the Chelsea final, even less than that, you know, it was inseparable. But it looks like Adam Webster is ruled out. Not going to play, and Enoch Mwepu as looks like he's going to miss it as well. He scored against Liverpool in the first leg. Whether it was a cross or not, I don't know. We're not going to get into that, but it's just the offside trap, I think, and the fact that it's away from home, early kickoff, and all those things is just, it's a little bit of a banana skin, I think. But I think Liverpool will have to. I mean, it's difficult saying Liverpool will have to play the best team and stuff, because then midweek we've got to go to Arsenal again, you know, 4 days later again. So this is what happens really when you're going for a quadruple, and this is why Pep has had such a large squad over the past few years, and this is why Klopp's calling for five substitutes all the time.
Yeah, it's tough, isn't it? Every game becomes like a cliche line, but it is true. Every game's like a final, isn't it? You know, you have to go to every game at every venue pushing for the win. You know, for the victory. You can't really go somewhere and think, well, we'll pick up a draw there, maybe draw that one, win the next one. You just have to go and get 3 points, which it's exciting. Obviously, you'd much prefer that to can't be playing for nothing, but it's also not good for the nerves.
Yeah, I mean, 2 days later, City go away in a night game to Crystal Palace. So if Liverpool can pick up a win, that could be a potential banana skin for City. So, you know, it could be one of those weekends where there's quite a bit of a change in our league table looks, how things look. But hopefully Liverpool pick up a win anyway. A few days later, Liverpool have Arsenal. Thoughts on them this season? They seem to have turned the corner. They seem to have moved out of the misery stage of the trust the process. Because you have to suffer at the start, don't you?
Yeah, they have plenty of that. I hope Gar's listening.
Let's get Guy back on, yeah.
Yeah, because he firmly stated on more than one occasion that he wanted Arsenal to sack Arteta. I don't know what.
Yeah,
I don't know if he's in that camp still now, because, okay, they started, we, you know, specifically talk about this season for the minute, they started really poorly. We know that. I think it was the worst ever Premier League start. he's messaging us saying he never said that, but he did. on several occasions, and we will expose the evidence if needed. But yeah, in Arteta Arsenal trust now, where starts the Premier League season, but now it looks completely different. I mean, they could really solidify that top four, couldn't they, if they win these games in hand? I think they're already in top four, have two, maybe even three games in hand on some teams. Seem to really solidify what they're trying to do. And I think what really impresses, I know this is more than just down to Arteta, but the stuff that they've done off the pitch is really well. You know, shedded about 90 mil off the wage bill and seems to have a clear direction, real alignment. Recruitment, I think, has been really good for the past, you know, year, 2 years. And they just seem to be on an upward trend. But probably a decent time again, finally, to be an Arsenal fan.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Yeah, well, you know, you mentioned recruitment there, and I think a lot of it comes down to recruitment. But I think it's interesting that over the course of the summer, we probably didn't give them much credit. I'm not sure we rated transfer windows back then. I think we rated the January one. But if we would have rated it, you know, we didn't have too much awareness of Nuno Tavares. Adam Ramsdale, we knew all about, at least we thought we did. Sambi Lokonga, I think that's an okay sign. I mean, he was captain of Anderlecht, I think, so not a bad sign. 21 years old, I think he was, so he's a decent player. Odegaard, we knew about. I think they just secured him on a permanent deal. And with anybody else?
I think the right back.
Tomiyasu.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, again, I mean, good player, but he wasn't like an open lights name, was he? But like a marquee sign and like that, so.
Ben White as well.
Yeah. Liverpool were linked with him for a period. But again, Ben White, Arsenal over the past few years have been criticised in a physical sense and for not having their own version of Van Dijk, really never replacing Vieira and all that stuff. And Ben White is one of the shortest and least physical centre-backs around. So again, it looked like Arsenal were making one of those signings again. But I think it just sums up that it comes down to how they use, what the plan is for them, how the coach uses them, where they fit in. And I think out of them all, I don't think there's been a single flop, really. I think they've all contributed.
Yeah, they have. It's been, and obviously, I actually think whilst we never evaluated it, I actually remember a fair bit of criticism, you know, for the moves for White, for Ramsdale. But, you know, so far, Arsenal are kind of the ones with the last laugh. They've done well recruiting wise, and I think it does all go back to that poignant period around, was it or December 2019? So I think when Everton and Arsenal both kind of similar teams terms of where they were in the table, both looking for the next manager, and both really had the choice between Arteta and Ancelotti, didn't he, at the time? Many Arsenal fans.
I am proud to say that I was in the Arteta camp for Everton.
Yeah, well, we talked about it, didn't we, on the Analyse and Everton show, where we were like, look, get the appeal with Ancelotti, obviously, you know, big name, but there's a reason why Arteta would maybe be the better shout. Talked about it, took some stick for it. But you now look a few years down the line, what's happened? Arteta gone in, young manager, kind of given time to build a philosophy, really align the club, recruit to go with that philosophy, whereas Everton went for Ancelotti, who didn't really implement any sort of philosophy, and then up and left, and now they're an absolute mess, you know, kind of a team fighting relegation. You know, two teams really at the opposite end of the table. And although Arsenal are historically a bigger club, at the time of what we're talking about, both teams were very similar in where they were, you know, in terms of squad quality, where they were in the table. You know, either could have kind of pushed on, and it's Arsenal's decisions in bringing in Arteta that have kind of made them once again a team pushing for Champions League, whereas Everton have gone the opposite way.
Well, I think the difference between both of those approaches, you could argue, and I think Liverpool have epitomised this over the years as well, is you could argue the difference between Everton's appointment there and Arsenal's appointment is just patience. I think Everton have seemed in more of a hurry to get to where they want to be. And a lot of clubs end up going further back because of their impatience to get to the top, if you know what I mean. Whereas the clubs who are kind of looking in the mirror, appreciate the mistakes they've made and just kind of appreciate that in order to get back where we were, we're going to have to suffer for a bit and we're going to have to fall a little bit more. Arsenal seems to have done that, but come out the opposite end, and it's kind of like light at the end of the tunnel type thing. Whereas Everton is still wandering around in the tunnel, not knowing how to get out of it and stuff. And I think Liverpool have done similar. And I think one area you can certainly compare Liverpool to Arsenal over the years, I'm getting more and more in the camp of, like, when it comes to transfers, just don't make any mistakes. Just make only hits. That's it.
And, or at least minimise them, yeah.
Yeah, and that means you don't sign anyone. If that means you go light in a certain position for a full season, so be it. You know, you just manage it, just suffer for a little bit then, because long term, if you're constantly thinking about tomorrow, it doesn't have help if you're minimising these flops. And I think any time you do sign a flop, especially an expensive one, it can set you back about two windows. And it can really kill you. It can kill your momentum. You can take one step forward signing a good player, but two steps back if you sign a bad one. And I think Arsenal and Liverpool, especially over the past few years, have shown the importance of only signing hits. Like, if you look at Man United in the summer, seem to be on the right track a little bit. It takes one bad sign in my opinion, Cristiano Ronaldo, and they've absolutely changed that direction completely. So I think there's a lot of comparisons to be made between the two, and it's funny actually, because when FSG first came on the scene, Arsenal were the shining example for John Henry to follow. He was quite enamoured by what Arsene Wenger was doing and how he was developing young players for cheap prices, improving the value and stuff.
I also think they've done quite well with the some contract decisions as well. You know, not getting, maybe tying down the likes of Lacazette, who's clearly a solid Premier League player, but, you know, not kind of overcompensating with offering him a new deal. I think there's been a couple of examples of that they've done quite well.
Yeah, well, and he seems to be, I mean, Arteta's been received a little bit of a criticism from some of the podcasts I've listened to for cutting ties with these players who basically aren't doing it, like Mesut Ozil and Aubameyang in particular. And as a result of that, he's being perceived by some as the type of manager who can only deal with kids or can't deal with big personalities or whatever. But I think if Klopp or Guardiola makes the same move, and Klopp did with Sacco, they get cheered because they've got the status behind them. Whereas because Arteta hasn't got the status behind him yet, he's getting doubted as to whether it's a fall down on his management. But I said at the time when I first listened to him, when he first moved to Arsenal, when I was listening to him speaking, that I think he knows what he's doing, Arteta. And I think this one, again, it's not a banana skin because Arsenal are obviously a tough opponent, but it's going to be a tough game because Liverpool are away from home. Arsenal have top four to play for. And as we're showing on this podcast, on this talk now, they are on the upwards trend.
Yeah, I think this will be a tough game, actually. If I was looking at, you know, fixtures over the next 6 weeks, I think this is going to be one of Liverpool's toughest by far, really. I'm trying to think what the record is like at the Emirates recently. Let's see if I can find it.
Well, when you were doing that then, what I will say is Liverpool did face them at the Emirates fairly recently in the Carabao Cup semi-final.
Oh, yeah.
Arsenal played pretty much the team that they're going to play against Liverpool in a few weeks, or next week. Their team was Ramsdale, Tomiyasu, White, Gabriel, Tierney, Sammy Lekonga, Saka, Odegaard, Smith-Rowe, Martinelli and Lacazette. And Liverpool, I mean, Cade Gordon played, Curtis Jones played, other than that it was, and Kelleher played. Other than that, it was pretty much Liverpool full strength as well. No Salah though, and no Mane, and no Diaz, obviously, and no Alisson. So, looking at that, Liverpool should have enough to inflict a similar result, really. I do think they're still much stronger than Arsenal, much more mature as a team. But I do think it'll be a tough game. And I am starting to race Arsenal, and if they're going into this game on the back of a few wins, which it seems to be, could be a tough one.
Yeah, I agree, tough one.
But yeah, Arsenal lately, I wrote about them recently. They are using the 4-2-3-1 shape, but with possession, Thomas Partey is tucking in into a Fabinho type space. Xhaka's pushing up into like a number 8 type space. So it looks like a 4-3-3 almost, because Odegaard tucks in as well. So it's going to be interesting. Maybe two systems very, very similar sometimes coming together. So yeah, should we do predictions? Are we leaving that nowadays?
I feel like if it was a day or two before, I'd probably predict on that one. But it's hard with the Brighton one. It's tough. Yeah. Well, I'm probably going to sit it out. I think we're best to sit it out, mate.
Yeah, I agree. But anyway, it's going to be an interesting week. Liverpool have two potential banana skins on the horizon. So two away from home as well. So it's going to be interesting to see how we get on. But Dave, it's nice to have you back, mate.
Thanks, mate. Cheers.
Yeah, and we'll be back next week to talk about Liverpool's Champions League draw and things like that, and whoever Liverpool have got upcoming. So thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you then.
You've been listening to the Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.